From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Foothill.
Coming up, we take a tour of San Francisco neighborhoods. First, we visit an oasis in the Tenderloin.
The gate was open. I walked in. I'm like, oh, how beautiful. I was like, it's just gorgeous, and I thank God that this place is here.
In Chinatown, we'll visit some senior citizens who know how to put on a show.
Nowadays, when we come out in our fishnet stockings, we don't even have to get to the stage yet. People are like, whoa, they start applauding.
And in the Mission District, we go from the stage to the page.
This is a place where you'll get your work published alongside these other excellent authors.
We're getting to know the people in your neighborhood with our special co-host, columnist Gary Camilla, on this membership campaign edition of Cross Currents. Stay with us. Over the next hour, we're going to take a sonic tour of San Francisco neighborhoods. And for our first stop, KALW's Ali Budner brings us this excerpt of her visit to a San Francisco forest.
Can we go on a little tour here?
Sure. Right now, we're standing in front of a more arid desert kind of feature.
The street sounds don't let you forget you're in the heart of the Tenderloin. But as soon as you set foot in this park, you know you've walked into a unique space.
Grasses, there's the hummingbird again.
That's Daryl Smith, my tour guide.
And I'm co-founder, director of the Luggage Store Gallery with my partner, Lori Laser.
Together, they founded this place, the Tenderloin National Forest. It's off of Ellis Street between Hyde and Leavenworth. And let's be real, it's still a concrete alley sandwiched between tall brick buildings. But if you let yourself zoom in on what's in here, it really can feel like a verdant oasis. Trees and plants of all colors and sizes surround us. A water fountain filled with bright orange fish bubbles in one corner. A neon sign hangs over a shed with a living grass roof. It reads in cursive script, "Tell your stories here." An earthen oven, giant colorful murals on every wall. My favorite touch is the arrowhead-shaped greeting sign that looks a lot like the traditional National Forest logo.
It's comforting. It's very, very comforting. And it's very serene.
That's Frankie Madison. He comes here to relax.
In this chaotic city now, it's nice to have a little quiet place to be. Especially here in the Tenderloin. I mean, everything is so upside down and backwards that to step through that gate and to come in here, you just transcend to a different place. You're not in the Tenderloin anymore.
That's Ali Budner, and you just heard an excerpt from her profile of the Tenderloin National Forest. You can hear that entire story at KALW.org, and that's also where you can become a member of KALW. That's right, today we kick off our fall membership campaign. You can donate online to KALW at KALW.org and by calling 800-525-9917. Again, that number is 800-525-9917. That's how you can show your support for this kind of programming. We take you to places that you may not know about. That's what we are about. If you support that kind of programming and reporting, give us a call now at 800-525-9917. Stories that help you get to know where you live. And one person who helps us do that is columnist Gary Camilla. He's the author of a new book called Cool Gray City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco. And Gary joins me now in studio. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Hannah. It's nice to be here.
Thank you for coming. Well, you know this city inside out. You were born here in the Bay Area. You worked as a cab driver for a long time and as a reporter. You've written about this city, all, you know, corners and crevices of the city. And your new book is like a love story or a love letter to San Francisco. You take the reader on a tour of spots around the city, not just districts, you know, or a neighborhood. No, you go to a spot, like specific intersections and specific hills, and you have these rich personal stories you know, to tell from all over the city, and you immerse us in the history of the spot. And so we just started off in the Tenderloin, as you just heard, because that's kind of almost where your book starts. Your second chapter of the 49 chapters is about the Tenderloin. So why was it important for you to cover the Tenderloin early on in the chronicling of the city for you?
Well, part of it was the opening chapter is set in the Farallon Islands, which are probably the most wild, inhospitable, crazily, you know, natural, jagged part of any major city in the world, these shark-infested islands 28 miles offshore. And to me, they kind of represent the depth of nature, the openness to nature that is so unique about San Francisco, and I wanted to open with that. And then I wanted to go to the Tenderloin because it's the ultimate dissonance. I mean, it's you can't get a more jagged jump cut than you can from going to the Farallons to the Tenderloin. And the Tenderloin is also really the most fascinating neighborhood to me in San Francisco. It's a unique neighborhood in the entire world. It has an extraordinary history. It has all of these historic SROs, and it has nonprofits who have been defending the most vulnerable poor members of society and protecting them there in the heart of downtown. In almost any other city, market forces would have simply caused that real estate to become gentrified. That's not going to happen in San Francisco. So it's this grand experiment with a lot of difficulties. And there's, you know, a lot of things that go on in the Tenderloin that are problematic. But it's a really vibrant neighborhood that's now going through this huge change with all the money coming into mid-market. So I wanted to, you know, go and talk about the Tenderloin as because it's the deepest urban part of the city. And it's really a fascinating place.
And you have many colorful stories in your book about the Tenderloin.
Some of which cannot be said on the air.
Many of which we are not going to say right. now on the right. air. We're going to leave that to the imagination of the listener. But, you know, why did you turn all of this into a book, all of your travels around the city on foot into a book? When did that idea get into your head?
I think it had always been percolating in my brain. As a writer, you know, you want to write about what you love. And you're also looking for something that you love that allows you to go in a whole lot of deep, interesting directions at once. And any great city, it's not just San Francisco, is a universe. You can cut down through time and you can extend through space. And there's just an endless number of stories that you find. And when you love a place, it just gives you that impetus to just keep exploring.
And we love this place indeed, as you do. And we want you, the listener, to get a hold of Gary Camilla's book, Cool Gray City of Love. Give us a call right now at 800-525-9917. And you will get this book if you pledge at the $120 level. $120 will get you 49 views of San Francisco. Did you even know there were 49 views of San Francisco? Give us a call right now. Get this book. We will be talking with Gary Camilla throughout the hour. You will want to get this book. $120 will get it. 800-525-9917. Or you can go online and click at klw.org. Donate now. You know, you think you know San Francisco. I'm sure many of our listeners think, you know what? Yeah, sure, you have Gary Camilla in studio. I know San Francisco better than Gary does. You think you know, but you don't know until you've read this book, seriously. 800-525-9917 right now, or go to klw.org to make your pledge and get the book. And now let's continue our tour of San Francisco. Next stop, Chinatown. When you think of Chinatown, you might think of traditional music, dim sum, silk cheongsam dresses, tap dancing. That's right, tap dancing. From the 1940s till the 60s, San Francisco's Chinatown was home to a thriving Chinese-American nightclub scene. Clubs had names like Forbidden City, the Chinese Sky Room, and the Shanghai Low.
They had showgirls, comedians, jazz singers, and magic acts, all featuring Asian American entertainers. And these clubs had wide appeal. Celebrities like Bing Crosby, Duke Ellington, and Lauren Bacall were all spotted over the years, along with tourists, businessmen, and locals. The Forbidden City even inspired a musical, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Flower Drum Song, which was also made into a movie.
Grant Avenue, San Francisco, California, USA. Looks down from Chinatown over a foggy bay.
The scene died out in the 1960s as Carol Doda-style topless dancing eclipsed the old variety show style. But there's a group keeping the memory of those old Chinatown clubs alive and high-kicking. KLW's Jen Chien has the story.
Starting from the top.
Wednesdays are rehearsal days for the Grant Avenue Follies, a 12-member dance troupe that does tap, jazz, hula, and other styles. They perform 4 to 6 times a month. That may not sound like a lot unless you know that most of the dancers here are over 70.
No. What time are we performing?
Yeah,
no,
at 11 o'clock. Uh-huh. Yeah, in the new facility, fifth floor, Asian section.
The group came together 9 years ago. Cynthia Yi, who used to dance at the Chinese Sky Room, was at a senior center dance class. Yi is an active member of the Chinese American community, and at the time, she was helping to plan a fundraiser for Chinese Hospital in Chinatown.
And so I said, come on, let's do a night at the Forbidden City nightclub.
How high the ocean, how high the moon.
All of them had great memories of performing in the clubs, the glittering stage lights, the sassy costumes, meeting all kinds of new people every night. So, the four former showgirls, then in their 50s and 60s, put together a number for the event.
We were an instant hit. And it was so much fun. We said, oh, let's do another one. And that's how it all began.
The troupe now performs at senior centers, nursing homes, VA hospitals, and fundraisers all over the world. And they've expanded from the original four former professionals to include people from all walks of life, a retired pharmacist, a school teacher, a dentist.
Every time we would do a fundraiser or get together, people would come up to us, oh my gosh, do you know I've always wanted to be a dancer, but my mother and father would never allow me to take dancing lessons. And I said, well, come on, let's get to the senior center. You're retired now, and let's start dancing.
Yi grew up in Chinatown in the 50s.
I grew up on Beckett Street. It's an alleyway right off of Jackson. And then I was about 10 years old, we moved up the hill to Powell and Clay. And then my mom still lives on Powell and Clay, except in a different building.
Her upstairs neighbors were dancers and entertainers who worked at the nightclubs. And one night, her parents took her to the biggest and most popular of the Chinese clubs, Charlie Lowe's Forbidden City.
That's when I first saw, you know, Dorothy Toy, Toy and Wing dance, and that's when I fell in love.
Dorothy Toy and Paul Wing were known as the Chinese Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. And Dorothy Toy just happened to be one of Cynthia Yi's neighbors. When she was 7, Toy encouraged her to go to ballet classes. And when she turned 17, Toy asked her to join the show at the Sky Room.
See that up there? That's the Chinese Sky Room. Where the stained glass is, that's the Chinese Sky Room. And inside had beautiful, wonderful antique chandeliers. And that's where I danced.
Where the Sky Room used to be is now a conference room for the Grant Plaza Hotel. The former site of Forbidden City now houses a franchise of the Barbizon Modeling School. And though she still spends a lot of time in Chinatown, Yi lives in the Richmond now. There's a large Chinese population there. And every Wednesday, there are the Grant Avenue Follies, rehearsing at the Rec Center on 18th Avenue. Ivy Tam is one of the group's original members. She performed at the Forbidden City in the early 60s, but before the Follies, she hadn't danced for many years. She says she's happy to have returned to dancing now at age 78, and especially happy to be able to bring back good memories for other seniors who aren't as spry.
At least when we perform, make them a little happier. That's one thing I can do. You know, if not, what I can do for them? Nothing. I think our little entertainment, make them happy for that day. That would be way good feeling for me.
Tam says she also enjoys seeing the surprise on people's faces when they realize what kind of show they're in for.
I can tell if they don't know us, they never see before, they expect we doing just the Chinese dancing, right? And little fan, little, you know, and things like that. They don't think we will do tap, we will do hula, we will do anything.
Tam's specialty is a dance with giant feather fans that always wows the audience. And that's not all.
And those days when people look at it, really is kind of, you know.
Pretty sexy.
Sexy, uh-huh. Every, but they like it.
They love it. They love our fishnet stockings. I mean, definitely. Nowadays, you know, when we come out in our fishnet stockings, we don't even have to get to the stage yet. People are like, whoa, they start applauding.
Both dancers agree on the best part about being with the Grand Avenue Follies.
But what makes us different really is the sisterhood that we keep.
The ladies socialize, travel, and eat huge Chinese restaurant meals together. They drive each other to appointments and watch out for each other's health. They say it's good to have that sense of family with the group, especially now that they can't find it in Chinatown. With waves of successive immigration from very different areas of China, and younger generations moving out of the neighborhood and even out of the city, the place just doesn't feel the same anymore.
People before is like big family. My mother was very sick. She had cancer. I take her to treatment every day or something. And those grocery store, they will ask, how's your mother? And then when if she's sitting in the car, and then they will go out to say hello to her.
Every apartment, we knew each other in the lobby. I don't think you have that nowadays. You know, it's not as close. My mother still lives in Chinatown, and she's very fortunate that her building is, you know, very close-knit. But in general, I don't believe that, you know, you see that anymore.
Yi hopes that the Grand Avenue Follies can bring some of the feeling of that old Chinatown back, at least for those that remember it. But she's also thinking ahead.
It's my dream to have a small venue, small place in Chinatown, to have the best wonton mein, wonton noodles, and the downstairs cellar to be a live entertainment area, and to have people to be able to come back to Chinatown, second generation, third generation, fourth generation, where they feel comfortable and say, wow, my grandfather used to live here, and they want to see the place. They want to experience the old Chinatown flavor.
For now, the ladies of the Grant Avenue Follies are bringing that flavor back, one song and dance at a time. In San Francisco, I'm Jen Chien for Cross Currents.
Coming up, we continue our tour of San Francisco neighborhoods and visit a new literary hotspot.
You are all sitting inside my brain baby right now. It's gross. It's gross, but it's cozy in here at least.
But first, I'm Hanat Baba. This is Cross Currents on KALW, and you're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents today because we're in our fall membership campaign. We're going to take just a few moments to ask you to show your support for Cross Currents and our style of storytelling by calling 800-525-9917 and becoming a member. Again, that number, call us right now, 800-525-9917. Show your support for Cross Currents. If you're a longtime listener since we started in 2008, if you're just listening starting today and you like it, 800-525-9917 is the number to call to show your support. You can also click on Donate Now online at KALW.org. With me today is Gary Camilla, San Francisco author of Cool Gray City of Love, a new book about the city by the bay, 49 views of San Francisco. And you can get a copy of his book if you call now at 800-525-9917. Donate at the $120 level. It's about, what, 30 cents for every day that we bring you Cross Currents and stories like the ones you're hearing today. We get a lot of feedback and we're thankful for it. We get your emails that say we love the show. Keep going. We love this story or we love that story. This is the time to, you know, to kind of put your money where your emails are, to put it bluntly. Support the program at 800-525-9917. I'm Hannah Baba. With me is Gary Camilla. And Gary, our last stop on our tour was Chinatown, San Francisco's Chinatown. What's your earliest memory of that neighborhood?
That was a very delightful piece you just ran. What a charming group of ladies. It's great they're keeping that glamorous tradition of the Forbidden City alive. My first memory, boy, I was such a small child. I was born in Oakland and grew up in Berkeley. And it was going across the Bay Bridge as a kid and nighttime and going into those streets, and they were just exploding with psychedelic neon. And I just, as a little kid, I'd never seen anything like it.
What year was this?
It was probably in the early 60s, maybe like 61, uh-huh. You know, something like that, 62. And just, you know, the mystery and romance of the place just overwhelmed me. And that feeling has never completely gone away. My chapter on Chinatown, I try to, you know, get under the surface of that glamour and the romance. And in the end, I actually had to rediscover it, even though obviously Chinatown in some ways is a slum. Mm. But it's a benign, essentially working slum. And slum is, you know, a very pejorative word, but it actually is a dynamic neighborhood that works for its inhabitants by and large, even though they often are living in very, very constrained conditions. So, and I have one of the fascinating things is how Chinatown came to look like it does. You know, Chinatown did not look Chinese before the earthquake. Chinatown goes back to almost the beginning of the founding of San Francisco. Chinese people began to settle around Sacramento and Grant, you know, as early as the 1850s. And after the earthquake, the city had always wanted to uproot Chinatown. And, you know, they saw it as this health menace, Mongolian tentacles reaching out towards San Francisco. And there was a plan to move it to Hunter's Point and just ship it out. And one of the reasons that Chinatown ended up looking like Chinatown with this fake architecture, made up Chinese architecture, is because the Chinese community wanted to create this sort of theme park Disneyland-like appearance because it would actually make them more palatable as a tourist attraction. So when you're walking through the streets of Chinatown, you may think, oh, this looks Chinese. And yeah, there are some elements drawn from traditional Chinese architecture incorporated there, but it's all fake. You know, they're not organically built in the building. So that's a fascinating story of
how
Chinatown...
So they were built for survival's sake.
Yeah, in some ways, it was protective coloration after the earthquake, and it worked. The city actually convened many meetings and were trying to get rid of Chinatown. They met again and again and again. And, you know, good thing we have some laws in this country, and they basically ran up against the fact they could not do it. The Chinese would not leave, and it would be illegal to dispossess them. And that was that. They ended up staying there.
Oh, goodness. So if you want more stories from Chinatown, you really have to get this book, Cool Gray City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco by my guest, Gary Camilla. You have 49 spots from around San Francisco in this book with your personal stories, with the history of that spot. The language is just so beautiful. The writing is great.
Oh, thank you.
And so I'm wondering how you chose the cover of the book and what spot this is on the cover of the book.
Well, my wonderful editor at Bloomsbury sent a whole bunch of images to look at. And when we saw this one, which is so surprising, that I first asked her, I said, I really don't want to use a photoshopped image. That seems wrong for my book. Then I looked more closely at it. It's a view looking east down nominally the steepest street in San Francisco, although it technically, it's not literally the steepest, Filbert Street, on the top of Russian Hill, looking east towards Washington Square and the spires of St. Peter and Paul Church. But it's one of those strange days when there's a fog hanging to the eastern part of where you're looking at, which is unusual. The fog usually comes from the west, and the fog obscures half of the entire middle part of the image. And then
it's
you
gorgeous.
Can see the Bay Bridge behind it, which looks very unexpected. I think the camera angle is very high on Russian Hill. Anyway, it's just it's a wonderful, odd, offbeat image. And that was the kind of thing that when I saw that, I thought, this is perfect. It's not the traditional. There's so many incredible images of San Francisco, but almost all of the most famous ones, like the ones from the Marin Headlands through the Golden Gate Bridge, I mean, they're spectacular, but everyone's seen them. This is a really unusual image.
All right. 800-525-9917. $120 gets you the book. And now let's go to our next story and visit one of the Mission's newest literary scenes. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. As we tour San Francisco's neighborhoods, there are many signs that the city's literary scene is still going strong. One of them is the sheer number of poetry slams. In SoMa, you'll find Brainwash Cafe, which hosts an open mic in a laundromat. Quiet Lightning is a collective that's taken poets everywhere, including a sporting goods store. And Oakland's Tourette's Without Regrets has trademarked the burlesque show / dirty haiku contest. Each slam is different, but finger snapping, occasional jeering, and cash prizes have become the slam standard. So when poet Tatiana Brown decided she wanted to launch a slam of her own, she knew she had to do something different. That brought her back to the printed word. She decided to take the poetry slam circus and put it in a literary journal with editors chosen randomly from the audience. She calls it Lit Slam. KALW's Holly J. McDeed recently attended one and suddenly found herself the editor of a literary anthology.
If Roman gladiators were handed poetry and told they had to bring the crowd to their feet or be fed to the lions, it would look like a poetry slam. Take the tightly packed Berkeley Poetry Slam, held weekly at the Starry Plow. Slammers can earn up to $100 if the masses love them. Love is determined by the loudness of the applause and the quietness of the hisses. An MC reigns the show like a circus ringleader. Poets are ruthlessly given scores after baring their souls to strangers. By the end of it, they could be $100 richer or have their spirits crushed. It only took one time for Tatiana Brown to get hooked.
The Berkeley Poetry Slam was one of the most welcoming community spaces that I found. It was a place that, like, really made people feel at home and gave you the opportunity to, like, get up on stage and experiment.
The breakup, or how to move into a house that is on fire. The floorboards are all pitch and buckle in your bedroom. The plaster walls are crumbling behind licking curtains of flame. And this is when you should throw your arms around your suitcases and cower. The entire structure...
To her, slam was a way to take stone-cold poetry to a live audience. But critics of slam think poetry should be read carefully, on the page. Plus, some say slam produces low-quality art, because slammers try to shock the audience with vulgarity or gimmicks in pursuit of the cash prize. But after a few years of the Bay's slam poetry scene, Brown decided she would try to bridge the divide between the high-brow literary school of her art form and the lawless oral tradition of slam.
I honestly did not see that coming.
In talking this out with a bunch of other writers, I started to think about, like, wouldn't it be interesting to see what poems people would get up on stage and read if they knew that the prize for that show was having the poem that they read out loud published and, like, put in print, you know, for posterity.
So Brown approached the owners of the antique shop at 998 Valencia Street in San Francisco with her idea. She called it Lit Slam. The two poets with the highest scores after three rounds would be featured in a new literary anthology she would publish called Tandem.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Lit Slam.
all sitting inside my brain baby right now. It's gross, but you can. It's cozy in here at least.
At my first Lit Slam, the room was packed. About half of the 60 or so people who were there had never been to a slam before. Brown said Lit Slam attracts a whole new audience and set of participants.
There are some people who've been doing slam in the Bay Area who don't come to my show and probably never will because they're not particularly interested in getting published, and that's fine. And then there are also poets who think or thought they hated slam, thought that slam was like a stupid circus, you know, full of sound and fury and signifying nothing. And ultimately, like, when you say, like, no, but the like, this is a place where you'll get your work published, and you'll get your work published alongside these other excellent authors, the incentive shifts pretty heavily.
My name is Maisha Johnson.
Johnson was one such poet. Her challenge was to turn poetry into a performance.
I consider my poetry more to be on the page. These were poems that I could put a little more personality into. They kind of had a distinct voice to them and a certain tone that I could get across, and so it could sort of, even if I wasn't feeling confident necessarily, I could sort of at least take on that persona to put it on stage.
Johnson says it was nerve-wracking, not just to have her poem scored, but at Lit Slam, the judges critique them too, in front of the poet and the audience. These judges are considered editors. They get to decide what goes in the journal. And they were chosen that very evening from people in the crowd. When Brown asked me if I'd like to be one of those editors, I was a bit surprised, but rose to the occasion.
You're an editor. Come to the stage. Oh, look. They're coming. Ladies and gentlemen, look. Check them out.
Normally, bartenders, cashiers, and others who aren't qualified doctors of literature don't get to decide what goes in a literary journal. But Brown says this type of crowdsourcing is a way to break the highbrow image of published literature and replace it with something more democratic.
And for me, that question is also about, like, can you trust the general public to know what good art is? Because so often we get taught that you can't, right? That people don't know greatness.
After each performance, we had about 30 seconds to pass our feedback and scores to Brown. One would be if we wanted to jump off of a cliff before the poem ended, and 10 if we believed the poem could be the de facto standard for all art anywhere.
Hey, editors, are you shaking your scores in the air yet? Because you should be. Sweet, I have a 5.5. How do you feel about that, audience? I got an 8.4.
And then she reads them out loud, right there, in front of everyone.
Well written, but could use more conviction. Great last line. Your tone was too bitter. I don't know if you get to tell somebody that about their lives. You are too bitter is not a thing that I think we get to say in the world to other people, because we don't know.
It felt like our critiques were also being critiqued. Some inspired wild applause. Others were booed. Poet Maisha Johnson got some love from the beginning.
The people say, black girls don't do yoga. So we'll call this a stretch of her impossible imagination.
Sibel Sayiner was another crowd pleaser.
Sing to me, O muse. I may not always have words for you, but that is why stories were made. To fill the gaps between our breaths when tongues are not enough.
She and Maisha Johnson made it to the last round.
I got an 8.0, an 8.5, a 7.0, and I have a 7.2. The way you are all spelling Sibel's name is amazing. They're all so different. A good slow pace, not too much or too little intensity. Your voice was epic-like.
Then it was Johnson's turn.
My canal can unearth birth. Those seeds you stashed within me could burst beyond me any second, could wail the wail of your whining louder than your lungs and the thrust of your delicate claim to pride. I could turn your dog against you.
All right, I have a 9.2. Woo! And I have a 9.0. Yeah. Very confident and engaging, fresh voice, memorable. Oh my!
Finally, it was time to announce the winner, the soon-to-be published poet. Maisha, the woman who claimed she could turn a man's dog against him, emerged as the victor.
Thank you all so much. I hope you have a great night.
But it's not quite over yet. The next step is to turn the energy, applause, pandemonium, sweat, and fear of Lit Slam into a literary journal. For the next year or so, Tatiana Brown will have to contemplate commas, periods, and fonts. All those literary devices you don't see when words come directly from a poet's mouth. But if all goes according to plan, when the journal tandem is ready, it'll be possible to hold a poetry slam in the palm of your hand. Take that, Walt Whitman. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
If you want to experience Lit Slam for yourself, the next event is on Monday, September 16th. Find more information online at klw.org. Coming up, we continue our tour of San Francisco neighborhoods with a stop at a local library. Our tour guide is a teenager.
This is the Viz Valley branch manager, Alice. Hi, Alice. Is your job here hard?
No, I get to work with wonderful kids like yourself, so definitely no.
And what do you think about my poem?
I love it. I think it's very creative.
You're listening to Cross Currents on KALW. I'm Hannah Baba. Joining me is columnist and author Gary Camilla. He's with us as a special guest today on our tour of San Francisco neighborhoods. And you can get his new book, Cool Gray City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco, right now, but only by calling 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917 to make your pleasure of support to KALW. And if you pledge at the $120 level, you will get the book. You can also go online at KALW.org and click on Donate Now. And you have been challenged, oh audience. Ian Stockdale of Palo Alto is betting you can call in and pledge $475. You have a challenge. $475, and he will match them. But that happens only if you give us a call right now. This is our fall membership campaign. Show your support to Cross Currents. Give us a call now at 800-525-9917. Pledge at the $120 level and get Gary Camilla's book, or you can go to klw.org and pledge at any level. Show your support for the show. Gary, we just heard about, you know, one side of the city's literary scene, you know, but there are stories from all over San Francisco that represent literature. Your book is definitely one of them. And I want to go back a little bit to the mission. You have a whole, you know, chapter on Mission Dolores, and you have a story about how the mission was saved from the 1906 fire. Can you tell us it?
Yeah, this is an extraordinary story. One of the reasons that the 1906 earthquake and fire destroyed virtually all of downtown San Francisco was that the water mains cracked and none of the hydrants were working. So there was the city was forced to resort to dynamiting on blocks, which actually backfired, and most historians think created more fires than were put out. But the flames on the third day of the fire, which I believe it started with the so-called ham and eggs fire that began in Hayes Valley when somebody was cooking breakfast. That ended up being the largest of all of the fires that had broken out, and they broke out, many different fires broke out all over the city, and it raced into the Mission District, and it was, you know, roaring along down, you know, around Valencia Street and moving up 18th, 19th Streets, moving into the heart of the Mission, and suddenly, in this crisis, somebody discovered that the fire hydrant, which still stands at the top of Dolores Park, on 20th and Church was working by some miracle. And there's this amazing scene where there's like hundreds of San Franciscans, just regular, you know, people are hanging out in Dolores Park as an open place that was safe. And there's a bunch of firemen that are trying to push this big, heavy machine up Dolores Street, which, you know, going up on the east side of Dolores Park is very steep. So all of these people in the park rush over to help them, and they block the fire engine after each push, and they push it and push it and push it. You know, the whole, you know, all of the citizens, the firemen, police, all working together, pushing this up to the top. They connect it up to the hydrant, a great, water jets out, everyone cheers, and they haul it down and fight the fire, which is raging down on 20th Street. Mm. And thanks to that, you know, and then it takes like 7 brutal hours of firefighting, but the fire doesn't cross south of, I believe it was 20th or 22nd.
And so that one fire hydrant saved the Mission District.
Yeah, in all probability, that's because incredible. The fire was racing to the south. And
you
that's
call
why.
It the golden.
And it is called the Golden Hydrant, and it is still painted gold on every April 18th in commemoration of its faithful service.
David Eggers said, quote, "I can't imagine there's anyone who knows San Francisco better than Gary Camilla." And he's here with us now to ask you to contribute. This is our fall membership campaign. If you contribute at the $120 level, you will get Gary Camilla's book, Cool Gray City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco. There are 49 chapters in this book. 49 different views from all over the city, places you probably never even knew were there. And if you knew they were there and you places you frequent, the stories he tells about each one of those spots is just incredible. 800-525-9917 is the number to call right now. Join in our pledge campaign, our fall membership campaign. Become a member of KALW if you're not already a member. If you've been meaning to support the station, to support Cross Currents, this is how you can do it. Give us a call right now, 800-525-9917. Our hours goal is $2,500. We can do it. I hear the phones ringing. You need to be the next person who calls. 800-525-9917 or go online at kalw.org. Ian Stockdale of Palo Alto has challenged you. You right there in your car, in your home, you've been challenged. $475 is the challenge. So give us a call. 800-525-9917 is the number to call. Again, the website, kalw.org. You're a listener to Cross Currents. You've been listening to Cross Currents for years. You tune in at 5 o'clock Monday through Thursday for the interviews, for the arts and culture reporting, for the depth that you get from Cross Currents. So why not support it? 800-525-9917. I'm Hanat Baba. With me is Gary Camilla, the author of Cool Gray City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco, such a rich book with so many. I mean, I can read like 2 chapters a day for the rest of my life. It's just so, and it's amazing that all of this exists in this 7x7 city. Incredible. 800-525-9917. And you can keep calling there or click to donate at klw.org as we return to our tour of San Francisco neighborhoods. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Our community storytelling project Here is all about going out into Bay Area neighborhoods and bringing back stories from the people who live there. When Here producers went to Visitation Valley at the southern tip of San Francisco, they met DeJohn Simpson, who spends a lot of time at his local library.
We're here at Viz Valley Branch Library with Here, pop-up radio project at Visitation in Lila. Walk back in because it's cold outside. When you first walk in, it's 2 big palm trees. The floor looks nice as soon as you walk in. It's like bricks with different colors, so it looked nice. Today I was here actually early, so I had to wait at the door.
My name is Dejon Malik Simpson. I live in Sunnydale neighborhood. After Viz Valley, like, you keep going up the street and you'll reach Sunnydale. Sometimes it'd be fun, like at the top of the hill it's peaceful, at the bottom of the hill it's like shooting and things that's not that good. But then, like, when you get into Viz, it's not like that anymore. It's funner. It's like more peaceful. It's like the library's here. It's like always people you can talk to.
Hi, ladies.
This person that I'm about to go take us to, my auntie named Alice.
You know, I have bags. I can get you bags. So you don't have to ruin your purse.
This is the Viz Valley branch manager, Alice. Hi, Alice. Is your job here hard?
No, I get to work with wonderful kids like yourself. So definitely no.
And what do you think about my poem?
I love it. I think it's very creative.
Sometimes I get, like, good ideas. It's like a lot of stuff I do, like write songs. I could rap. I could crack jokes. And I could act. My grandma said I should be an actor when I get older. Today, I came and got on the computer so I could read a book that they don't got here. Like, see, this is children's books. I'm going to the City of Arts and Tech after I graduate. I want to go to Stanford University. When we was in fifth grade, we at the end of the year, they always used to take us to Stanford. And, like, I've been in one of their classes, and it's like the teacher actually said that I should come back and be in his class. His class was actually about nature or whatever. I asked the question, and everybody started clapping because I was the only 10-year-old in that class, 10 or 11 then, only 10-year-old, and everybody was like, whoa. And then I ended up falling asleep in the end of the class. And this is the movies. They're in alphabetical order. Lamps right here, so if you need to read and you need light for it. I'm leaving the library now and I'm going home to eat. Because I am hungry.
Dejon Simpson spoke with Hear Here producer Wendy Baker. You can meet the team behind Hear Here at our next live storytelling event next Thursday. It's called The Sights and Sounds of the Bayview, a live storytelling event featuring the remarkable people who live and work and make a positive impact in that neighborhood. Join us and me, I will be hosting that show at the Bayview Opera House on Thursday night. And for more information, visit our website, KALW.org, to learn more. And that's also where you can become a member of KALW. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Today we're kicking off our very short but very important fall membership campaign at KALW.org. You can click on Donate Now or call 800-525-9917 and make a contribution. And if you donate at the $120 level, we will send you a copy of Cool Gray City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco, authored by our guest co-host today, columnist Gary Camilla. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Hannah.
Thanks for hanging out with me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And so remember, you can get his book, which basically takes you around the city. Your neighborhood is probably in this book in ways you've never imagined, with stories you never knew about. You want to get this book to learn more about the city and just the history that's so rich that's in this book by Gary Camilla. 800-525-9917. Call right now and you can get the book at the $120 level. Go to klw.org and make a click at Donate Now. It is a bestseller, this book, Cool Gray City of Love. Dave Eggers said he can't imagine anybody who knows San Francisco better than Gary Camilla. He has spent, you know, years in this city, and it shows in this book. 800-525-9917 is the number. Call right now. Support the show. Show us you're listening to us. Are you listening? Hello?
Anybody out there? Are you listening? Are you enjoying the show? Do you enjoy Cross Currents? Why don't you give us a call at 800-525-9917 and show us. Ian Stockdale of Palo Alto has a challenge out. He has challenged you, the audience, to raise $475, and he will match them. So don't let him put his money back in his pocket. Do the right thing. Get on 800-525-9917 or kalw.org to make your donation, your contribution to your public radio station today. So, Gary, you have some pages open there. You want to read a little bit from, entice the listeners a little bit with some lines from your book?
Sure. I'd be happy to. This is the beginning of a chapter. It's called The Dead City. And the specific location, each chapter in the book is set in a very specific place, is Building 253 in the Hunters Point Naval Shipyard. Mm. And this chapter is an exploration of the shipyard and of that southeastern part of San Francisco and of wastelands in general. Mm. This is how it begins. Many of my happiest moments have been spent in the weirdest, most obscure, often ugliest parts of San Francisco. Every explorer, even a two-bit one like me, whose realm is only a 7 by 7 mile square, lives for the moment of discovery. And just about the last places you can still discover in San Francisco are those nobody wants. Vacant lots, abandoned buildings, unclassifiable patches of dirt filled with old tires and rusting cans and ripped up girly magazines and pieces of unknown machines. Wastelands.
Mm.
But while part of the allure of wastelands is the joy of discovering them, their appeal is deeper. Cracked pavement and old mattresses and fading signs and broken springs and lost piers are the fallen leaves and branches in the great artificial jungle that is a city. Entropic, unclaimed, decaying, created by man but no longer under human control, they are a kind of second-order nature. No man's lands are evidence that a city is dying, which means that it is still alive, that it has not yet become an android. They are a healthy sign of defeat and decline. A city without wastelands is a city without soul.
Cool Gray City of Love, 49 views of San Francisco, 49 chapters, 49 spots in San Francisco with the history, with Gary Camilla's great writing and description of these spots. Just a great book to have. Yours for $120 pledge at 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917. And whatever you pledge will go towards the challenge. Ian Stockdale of Palo Alto has challenged you at the $475 level. Give us a call at 800-525-9917 and prove to Ian that we have listeners that not only listen and care about the program, but that support it as well. 800-525-9917. $120 gets you the book. But if you pledge at any level, if you contribute at any level, you can take home the Cross Currents Bay Area Beats Compilation CD. And that features local musicians on our show. And that's something we do every day, Gary, really. Mm. At the end of Cross Currents, we always play the music of a local band and tell you where you can go see the local band that weekend.
Terrific.
And it's only local bands supporting local. You too, audience, support local. 800-525-9917. Support local public radio. Pledge at any level, like I said, and take home this CD that features local musicians that have been featured on our show. And, you know, we've got a great pool of talent here in the Bay Area. Call now, make a contribution at any amount at 800-525-9917. And we'll take you on this musical journey. And it also includes a compilation of Bay Area Beats, our segment on Cross Currents, in which we kind of give you a little glimpse of the inside world of these local music bands. 800-525-9917. Gary, music and San Francisco. What are some of your favorite musical spots in San Francisco?
Oh, boy. I mean, it's such a rich legacy. But to me, I'm a huge jazz fan. So the old Keystone Corner, which is now, you know, its spot is taken by a Chinese restaurant next to the police station in North Beach. I spent many, many happy hours. That was one of the great jazz clubs in the world. Mm. So, of course, I have deep, fond memories of that. But no, all over, you know, the hate, you know, just wandering through Golden Gate Park. You know, I think of the Jefferson Airplane and, you know, after bathing at Baxter's, one of the all-time great rock, most creative rock albums ever made, deeply associated with San Francisco. Mm. You know, they're talking about acid, incense, and balloons in the park. And there's just, it goes on and on, you know, Candlestick and the Beatles' last concert.
Right. What about contemporary today?
You know, there's just, you know, it's just rich, wonderful clubs on Polk, you know, on Valencia Street, that there's just a thriving scene that continues to go on. And there's, you know, now there's the new Jazz Center on Franklin, and which is terrific, and Yoshi's, and there's just, there's all kinds of, the music scene here is very vital.
And that is reflected on Cross Currents. At the end of every show, we play local music that you can go and listen to in person. You can get a CD of that local music right now at 800-525-9917 if you pledge on any level. Pledge anything, and we will send you this CD. But if you pledge at the $120 level, we will send you Gary Camilla's book, Cool Gray City of Love, 49 Views of San Francisco. That last story took us to Englewood. So I'm wondering if you know where Englewood is. Let's try to play a little trivia with you. Where's Englewood?
Oh, Ingleside.
Ingleside.
Oh, Ingleside.
Englewood is in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Ingleside. Where is it?
Yeah, the Ingleside district is off Monterey in the sort of south, you know, central part of the city, and is renowned for having an old horse race track that's in the neighborhood. So
right.
It's a very charming.
I thought I'd stump you. I thought I'd stump you. It didn't work. 800-525-9917. Give us a call right now. I couldn't stump Gary Camilla. He knows so much about San Francisco. You will find out why in this book. 800-525-9917 and ask for it. And thank you for joining me, Gary.
Thank you, Hannah. It's been my pleasure.
All right. This is Cross Currents on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco.